Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
The Athletic.
Hello, everybody, and welcome once again to The View from the Lane. It's the Tottenham Hotspur podcast from The Athletic. I'm your host, Danny Kelly. Alongside me, as so often, I'm delighted to say, is The Athletic's Jack Pitbrook. And alongside him, making a long-awaited, much-anticipated, and very welcome return, it's Charlie Eccleshare, everybody! The Eccleshare is back. Hello, Charlie.
Hello, how are you doing?
The excitement of my voice is real. Love Tim Spears, but you're the original gangster on here, and it's great to see you. Well,
I'm really well, yeah, and it's really, really good to be back. I've been really looking forward to doing this, so yeah, I'm excited, and it's great to see you, only via Zoom, but
yeah,
still.
And of course, we're going to be losing Jack sometime in the medium future. You see the welcome you'll get when you come back, Jack? It's almost worth it, isn't it?
Almost, yeah.
Yeah, okay, not quite, then. Okay. Listen, on this episode, we'll be discussing why Conte still hasn't gone, who could be next, and the bigger picture regarding Enoch and Daniel Levy. Obviously, it's a bit of the calm after the storm of the weekend, when obviously that press conference from which Jack is still getting therapy to get past was still very much in our minds. Charlie, we will do a handover episode with you and Tim Spears, so I'd be really interested to compare your experiences of this very turbulent 6 months at Spurs, yours from a distance, him from the coalface. But before we do that, in an upcoming episode, can we just give us your opinion of what your feelings of what it's been like, slightly distant from Spurs over the last 5-6 months?
Yeah, I've definitely been really surprised with the performance level. I mean, when I left, it was Spurs were a point off top. They were third. They'd just beaten Leicester 6-2. And it was at that point where it was like, well, they're playing pretty badly but are picking up good results. So one of two things is going to happen here. Either they're going to kick on and play well and then imagine how good the results are going to be then, or these performances are going to catch up with them and the results are going to suffer. And obviously, it was very much the latter. But and it felt like it could go either way at that point. And I have to say, I've just been really surprised by it. Took until probably the City game in February for a performance you'd say was actually a good all-round team performance. So it's been strange. It's been a mystery. You know, I thought they'd come third this season. I said that in our pre-season predictions. And if you told me at the start of the season that a North London team was going to be top going into the international break, after that 3-0 derby in May when Spurs looked so superior and obviously pinched fourth, I would have thought that team was going to be Tottenham. So it's been a surprise to me, the performance levels, even if, you know, they're only a place lower down than when I left, and they could have, had they held on against Southampton, they would have remained third. But that would seem hugely deceptive. And I guess it is partly anyway, because teams below them have games in hand. But I mean, during that period before Christmas, I was in awe of Tim's ability to write different match pieces when every match was basically exactly the same. Where Spurs, well, there'd be two variants. Spurs would be awful in the first half, that was a constant, and then either they'd turn it around or they wouldn't.
Yeah, he was. So he was definitely earning his massive stipend then, wasn't he?
Yeah, exactly. His ability to find interesting ways to sort of reflect on those games was very impressive.
Okay, well, I'd like to get into that with more depth with you when we have Tim himself here. But back to the up to today, up to now, the minute, the moment. Jack, I'm turning to you here. What is happening at the moment with Antonio Conte, with the players who are away on international duty, the players who remain at the training centre, and what is happening at the club and what appears to be absolute stasis since we last spoke?
So, Antonio Conte is still head coach as of 9:40 in the morning on Thursday. I believe he's still in Italy, where he returned at the start of the week. At the training ground, I think the players who are in, the first team players who are in for training this week will be Longley, Danjuma, Sessegnon, Tanganga, Lloris, Austin and Whiteman. Plus, of course, quite a lot of, and Lucas Moura, plus lots of the youngsters. Of the young players, Ryan Mason will be taking training. That's what's happening at the moment. In the background, clearly, conversations have been happening all week about Conte's future. I still believe that the plan is that Conte will stop being Tottenham manager at some point. This has taken longer than I think many people would have expected. But the strange thing is that I get the impression that what's going on is being conducted with an awful lot of privacy and discretion, because very little information and news is coming out. You know, I'd love to come on this podcast, Danny, and tell you, well, Levy said this to Conte's camp on Monday, and then he called up some other potential replacements on Tuesday and all the rest of it. But very little information is coming out of the Tottenham camp. You know, it's not like, and this is true of, I think, all publications and journalists that cover Tottenham. It's been a very, very quiet week in terms of news developments. And I can't tell you how many conversations that I've had with people over the last week or so, expecting them to have a kind of an idea of maybe what's going on in private. And nobody really seems to know anything about the specifics of what's going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, I mean, talking to other Spurs correspondents as well, everyone's got this sense, it's very disconcertingly quiet. Everyone's trying to find out information. I mean, I was thinking back, and I do remember before Pochettino got sacked. Do you remember, Jack, there was sort of whispers in the first, because it happened in the second week of an international break. There were sort of whispers in that first week, but not a lot more than that. And they did a good job at keeping that pretty quiet. And so I think we're all sat here bracing ourselves because my sense is that they won't need to have someone in place until early next week, because that's when players start coming back from international duty and they start preparing for the Everton game. They're also helped maybe by the fact the Everton game isn't till the Monday night. So until then, they bear in mind as well that it's not an easy, straightforward process sacking a manager, especially when that manager has... It's not just him you're having to get rid of. He's got a lot of staff, et cetera, et cetera. So those are complicated negotiations. They'll be sounding out a lot of people on them. And they do have a little bit of time to play with because they don't need to have someone in place until the early part of next week. So that's my sense as to why it's dragging on like this. But as Monday, Tuesday hoves into view, there has to be some sort of solution. And also, as was the case with Pochettino, they obviously were also working to get in a replacement straight away. What's complicated this time is whether they do that again, or whether they go down the Ryan Mason route again. That's a really big decision. And I think it would stand to reason that, you know, in an ideal world, you get in a permanent replacement now rather than kicking that can down the road if they can get the right person in now. But a lot of the targets either are still in jobs that they can't leave, or they might think, well, you know what? I'd rather wait until the summer when we can really see the lay of the land. There could potentially be a lot of big jobs available in the summer. So do you want to just hold fire when you've potentially got quite a lot to lose coming in to just 10 games? Is that worth taking the risk?
I'm sure that Tottenham are at very least exploring the possibility of finding a permanent replacement now. I'd be very, very surprised if that were not the case, because I'm sure at the front of their minds will be what happened in 2021. They sacked Mourinho without really a plan for what came next. They gave it to Ryan Mason for the last seven games of the season. I thought Ryan Mason did pretty well. But then they still, when the season finished, they still didn't have a permanent manager, and they didn't have a permanent manager until the end of June, days before the start of pre-season. You know, the whole process took more than 10 weeks. And I think that they will be desperate. I mentioned, I think, last week about how much Daniel Levy would want a smooth transfer of power. I think even now, that is still what he will want. And I'm sure if he could get a permanent replacement in now, and he could sack Conte, appoint the new bloke, that he would rather do that than sack Conte, go to Mason and not have a permanent guy and leave the permanent process ticking along in the background.
As the days have gone by, there's a part of my brain that's even started going, well, maybe Conte's going to see out the season. That's not on the cards, is it? He that's over. It's just a question of how we get that to the end of the season. Well, the number of times I've said I can't see that this season, Charlie, only for it to turn out to be exactly that, you know?
But there are a lot of things going on here, because I also think symbolically for Daniel Levy to have to turn to Ryan Mason again for the second time in 2 years would just be the most kind of vivid symbol of the stasis that Spurs are in, because they'd be in exactly the same position as they were in 2 years ago. And I think that would be a really bad look. And I think, as Jack says, something that Daniel Levy would really want to avoid. And we've seen before as well with that Pochettino to Mourinho, that was done incredibly quickly. Do you remember Pochettino was sacked on the Tuesday night by, I think, 7 a.m., maybe even 6 a.m. the following morning? The announcement came that Jose Mourinho had replaced him. It was incredibly quick. With Nuno as well, he went on the Monday morning, and already it was, by the Monday afternoon, we knew Conte was coming in. That's how he'll want this to operate. And as Jack says, the lessons from 2 years ago, which was embarrassing, you know, for the whole club. But then I guess the follow-up question is it necessarily, even if it's a really bad look to have an interregnum and give it to Mace for the rest of the season, it would be surely preferable to do that if you can't get the right guy in now.
100%, absolutely.
They should only get a permanent replacement now if they honestly all believe this is 100% the right guy. Otherwise, you are better off waiting until the summer, because as we've seen, thinking about the short term rather than the long term has cost them a lot over the last few years.
I agree with Charlie, but I have no confidence that will be the case.
Why is that?
I have no confidence. I just think that at Tottenham, they don't really think strategically. They think first, who do we want the manager to be? And then once you get the manager in place, you kind of cook up the strategy afterwards. So I think it's much more likely that they would want a new kind of shiny, glamorous, big name manager to come in now, I would imagine, even if he wasn't the right person for whatever reason, rather than doing it the right way around and coming up with the strategy first and then appointing the manager afterwards. I think the Tottenham board have got no benefit of the doubt left in the tank on this, I'm afraid, after the last few years.
I don't know why, and this is a bizarre thing to be thinking in some ways, they are not a publicly listed company. You know, it is owned by the people who own it. It's not on a stock exchange. Why are they worried about the optics? This is one of the few advantages of the ownership model in England, particularly. You don't have to worry about what people think about you, really, particularly in short terms like this, because 90% of football fans think their owners are gits anyway. What difference does it make? Just do what is right. Think carefully and do what is right. And definitely, I mean, I'm disappointed, not in you, Jack, but in to hear that they might make a short-term an appointment just for the sake of appearances, because it is such a critical appointment. And there'll be lots of people there, Charlie, right now, listening to us, who are very disappointed that it isn't already, not everyone, of course, and I think they do have to do due diligence, frankly, that, you know, there are several high-profile managers out there who are currently not in work, and I do get why they might want to wait till the summer, but they can be talked around. Among those, though, is Mauricio Pochettino, who with every passing day becomes more the king across the water.
Yeah, but again, I mean, I think for him, there is a lot to consider there. Is this necessarily the right environment to walk into? Is this the right time to walk into that environment? And yeah, do you want to wait until the summer when, who knows, Real Madrid might be available, Bayern Munich might be available? There will be more options.
He is not getting those jobs.
Why wouldn't he get Real Madrid? They've tried for him twice before.
I think, yes,
Real Madrid
I hear
tried
you
to appoint Pochettino in 2018 and again in 2021. I think it's plausible that if Carlo Ancelotti goes at the end of the season, that Real Madrid would at least try for a third time. You know, the last two times they tried to get Pochettino, the issue was that, you know, he had a contract at Tottenham in 2018. He'd just signed with no release clause in 2021 when they tried to get him out of PSG. He was only been there 6 months and PSG said no. Whereas this time, there's no contractual barriers to Pochettino.
There is, but there is the performance of PSG in the Champions League in the time between the last approach and now.
True.
That's why I think there might be a little bit reticent. And there are Champions League winning managers on the market now who haven't got a job. Thomas Tuchel, for example.
I think Tuchel would probably be first choice for Real Madrid ahead of Pochettino. Yeah, but
that's what I think as well.
But also, if Bayern Munich becomes available, maybe Tuchel goes there, which could happen. I mean, and Nagelsmann could be on the market as well. I mean, there are a lot of...
All the Italian clubs except Napoli will be looking to I suspect, change their managers.
Yeah.
Yep, all of them, I'm thinking, are the bigger ones. Roma, not so. No, that's not right. They love him there. But you can never tell what's going to be happening with him. All right, so you can't make stuff up for the sake of hits and downloads and clicks. So we don't know what is happening in the Spurs boardroom. And again, I'll back you up insofar as I understand there's quite apart from appointing a new person, just the complexities at a corporate level of getting half a dozen, I suppose, one very highly paid and five or six very well paid individuals to the end of their contract legally is tricky. And we saw that in the case of Antonio Conte at Chelsea, it ended up in the courts, didn't it? Let's hope we can do it a bit more cleanly than that.
I also think if they wanted to pay off Conte and all of his staff, they could do that pretty quickly. You know, Conte's got, £4 million of salary left in his contract. But I think I think it's safe for us to say they may not want to pay Conte all of the salary left on his contract. They may not think that he's earned it.
Sure.
And therefore it could plausibly come down to a process of negotiation.
Yeah.
Because Conte probably Conte won't want to come back to England. You know, he's staying in Italy now. He's not going to want to come back to training next week.
Arrivederci.
The Everton game.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised if there's an element of, you know, sort of standoff, negotiated brinkmanship on this particular point as to how much money he's owed.
But the standoff may come early next week when he's due back, because then you're in serious, as Jack, I mean, that's potentially an important cut-off, because then you are in the realms of, well, you're due back, you're not coming back. That then gives Spurs some leverage that could be very useful to them.
Yeah. What would also give Spurs a lot of leverage is if it looks like they do have another manager lined up. Because if they don't have a manager lined up to come in to replace Conte, then Conte has more leverage to get everything that he might want in severance negotiations. But if Tottenham do have a new manager lined up, then all of a sudden it's Conte might have to accept a package.
Do you think he might turn up outside the training centre and his car will be blocked by a barrier? He'll sit outside like Peter Odemwingie. I suspect I can see that coming. One or two quick comments from the players, who of course are in that most dangerous place for the clubs, away on international duty, where their matey and friendly local journalists get to talk to them in their native language, or in Matt Doherty's case, English, Irish. And I was, you know, we've had Kulusevski, who of course has worked with Conte at two clubs, saying, you know, what a great manager he is, and you know, we're all disappointed. Exactly what you'd expect. Matt Doherty, prior to captaining the Republic of Ireland to a triumphant 3-2 win over Latvia last night, was saying that he's just the greatest manager he's ever worked under, et cetera, et cetera. Spurs being mad to get rid of him. And my favourite, though, was Emil Højbjerg saying that, and this is so Viking, isn't it, that if he was to take the manager's post-match comments at the press conference you attended, Jack, seriously, to take them to heart, I think was the phrase he used in his own language, the manager would have to be more explicit. It was like you said, come on then, tell me it's me.
I think that's fair enough, because one of the funny things about what Conte said, of course, was that he wasn't saying there's two or three bad apples.
No.
He said the whole squad is rotten, basically.
Yeah.
And I'm sure if you're someone at Højbjerg who, you know, whatever you might think about him as a footballer, he's someone who prides himself on his application. He's also very well known for his proximity to managers. You know, people thought, some of the players thought he was a teacher's pet under Mourinho. I think that on Conte's first, I think when Conte showed up, he was kind of in on the first morning, you know, asking, you know, just so he could say hello to Conte. So he's always been very,
cup
very
of tea,
close
Antonio?
To managers. Yeah. So bringing him an apple and a banana. So I think he's probably thinking...
It'd be a little cafe, a little coffee, wouldn't it? Be a little coffee. You can only hold the handle with two fingers for Antonio, won't it?
I would speculate that he would be pretty pissed off, given how much he values, you know, being a good pro, being close to the manager, and being someone that the manager can always rely on.
But it's funny. I mean, the Doherty thing. I've been saying this, like, it's not obviously now the relationship is broken, but until not long ago, a lot of the players, or some of the players anyway, did still really rate Antonio Conte, and they loved him for a period. So what Matt Doherty left in January, didn't he, before things got really toxic? There was a lot of goodwill there. It's just that it's gradually been eroded and obviously burnt to the ground by what he said on the weekend. I found it funny as well, Pedro Porro gave an interview with The Guardian, and he was saying it took Sid Lowe to kind of reveal to him what Antonio had said. I don't know if Porro was playing dumb, but what his version of events was that he had no idea that Conte had said what he had. I mean, I find that kind of hard to believe. I think most of the players were well aware of it as it was happening. But yeah, he must have been oblivious. If that is the case, he would have been oblivious on the way back as to, oh, this is a bit of an awkward environment. I guess they're just upset with the draw.
I mean, the irony for him would be that he had his best game for Spurs, was Spurs' man of the match, and played pretty well, I thought. To be told that he was selfish then, because that was the word that was used by all of them, must have been a bit of a shock. And when no doubt Sid saw him trembling. He doesn't seem the trembling type, does he, Pedro Porro?
I was imagining, Jack, you at the game and sort of thinking about what your match piece was going to be, and Porro scores, like the rise of Pedro Porro. Yeah, and you know, you start.
Spurs,
there was a moment.
Finally have
is
the,
this the moment?
Spurs finally have the goal-scoring wing back they'd always wanted.
Exactly. And like, okay, and then they're 3-1 up. Yeah, this piece still works.
Porro piece is flying good. Here. Yeah, yeah. And then it will collapse.
R.I.P.
Jack, I know you wanted to do a very unusual thing on The View from the Lane, and to talk about why you were, Charlie, might want to prepare yourself for this, why you were wrong about something. Because, of course, mostly what we're doing is tell people how great we are and how right we are about everything.
Yeah, indeed. No, this is an idea that both Charlie and I have had kind of, I think, simultaneously over the course of this season. It's been that I think we were both really optimistic about Spurs at the start of the season. Charlie wrote a really good piece on this yesterday about which he can talk about himself, but part of which was how all the pundits got it wrong, really, including us, I think, who said that Conte would be a success. So I've just, and I do get, I mean, this is not why I want to talk about it, but I do get a lot of stick on Twitter from people who said, you said Conte was going to be good, you said Conte was going to be good, and he's been rubbish. And, you know, fair enough, because I did get it wrong. But I've just been thinking about why did we get it wrong? Why did we think that? Why was he so much worse than we expected him to be? And I don't know, really. I'd be interested. I mean, I've got a few theories. One is, I mean, we can go into these in more detail if we've got time. One is, I think, underestimating how corrosive the contract situation would be, allowing him to run his contract down in the final year, which no other club would countenance. I guess the other is underrating how much he would need his own top quality players in every position to make it work. I kind of thought, oh, he's not like Guardiola. He can make it work without elite players. But actually, I think that's not true. I think he can't make it work without elite players. So those are the big two things. I think the other thing is, and this is maybe where it kind of ties back to Mourinho a bit, is underestimating how quickly players would get bored of his style. When he was at Chelsea, the players got bored of him in the second season. At Inter, he actually won the league in the second season, so it wasn't put to test how he'd do in a third. But I think in modern, and this is certainly something we found with Jose, in modern football, players get bored of managers quicker than ever before, really. But I wasn't expecting Tottenham players to get bored of Conte's methods within 6 months. I thought he would have another year of grace. So those are my theories. I'd be interested to hear Charlie's, because I imagine Charlie's probably been on a similar journey.
Yeah, definitely. And that is something I talked about in this piece, which is basically the thrust of which is that no one comes out of this looking well, really, the Conte era. And I include us, you know, the media, who largely were very pro-Conte. And I think part of it is there is a real deference still in this country and in the sort of established media towards these kind of older, slightly, legendary managers. And, you know, last season, Gary Neville said that Rafa Benitez's Everton would be the kind of big overachievers of the season. You know, you think even Rafa Benitez was still, despite seeming like a complete busted flush, was still being held up as, you know, no, but you can trust him. You know, these this sort of binary between winners and losers. And, you know, Conte is a winner. Mourinho is a winner. Benitez is a winner. They're guaranteed success. It should be said as well, Conte was primarily brought in to salvage last season. And he did that. He did really well last season. You know, it hasn't been a complete failure. I think had they not, there wouldn't have been that many managers who could have come in and rescued that pretty wretched Nuno Spurs team and got them fourth. But I keep thinking back to the North London Derby in May 2022. Spurs won 3-0. And I wrote at the time, I think reflecting the prevailing narrative, which was that the master had schooled the apprentice and, you know, welcome to the big boy leagues, Mikel, because this is for Antonio Conte and Mourinho and those kind of guys, you know, back in your box. And it was, you know, Spurs were hailed as kind of future-proofing themselves by all you have to do really is hire a big name winning manager like Conte. He'll come in and get you fourth. Don't mess around with this kind of young upstart because you're going to lose 3-0 and your players are going to lose their heads. And the way in which things have sort of unraveled since then and the diverging fortunes of those two clubs has just been quite a wake-up call, I think, to a lot of people. I think I just really overestimated, how sustainable appointing someone like Conte really was.
I think the mistake that people make with Mourinho and Conte is that we get so wrapped up with this idea about winning mentality and the idea that if a manager has won trophies, it's because they have a winning mentality. And if you have that winning mentality, you can go into a club and it will rub off on the players by osmosis. I mean, I think that's nonsense, really, because what they have is not so much winning mentality, but winning methods. Like when Mourinho was so successful, it's because his methods were better than anyone else, in terms of like periodization, in terms of his tactical preparation of players, in terms of the kind of psychological tricks he was able to play to motivate players. And when Conte came through, Conte had winning methods. You know, he was so relentless on the training ground. He had an incredibly structured and disciplined style of play, which he was able to drill into players. 3-4-3
was kind of tactically
exactly
ahead of the curve. And
nobody else really played like him then, or I don't think really played quite like him since. But like winning methods don't last forever. Like we've seen this with the decline of Mourinho's career. You know, Mourinho had about 10 years where he was at the absolute top of the game. And since then, I think really, well, basically since Real Madrid, which he left coming up to 10 years ago, he's been on the downslope, even though he did win the title at Chelsea second time around. Conte, I think it's up for debate whether or not he's still at the downslope, but he's had his 10 years at the top. You know, it's more than 10 years since he started at Juventus, which was like probably the peak of his career. So it's not...
Arsene Wenger, we saw something similar.
Exactly. Like managers generally only have 10 years at the top, and so like, winning methods don't last forever. That's the point.
I mean, look, I've never understood this idea about winning mentality. Of course, you have to have a certain toughness to succeed in any profession where it's very competitive. Professional sport is the most obvious example. And I honestly believe that in the next decade, or the next few years, that's when we have these people at the absolute peak of physical fitness, that, you know, clubs will really start to, I mean, it'll happen in America first because we'll be too ashamed to do it in Europe, and we'll start to really work on players' minds. But if it's just about mentality, then we all know people down the pub who genuinely believe that they could manage a football club better than Pep Guardiola or Nagelsmann, whoever it is. They have the mentality. But it's nonsense. You have your talent, and you have your outcomes, and that's what you have. And when you go to each new club, that all has to start again. And I never believed that. I've been on a slightly different journey. I think I can have the paperwork to back it up. I never believed in the Conte thing. I didn't think he was the right kind of football manager for Spurs tactically. Then I had to eat some humble pie towards the end of the season, where last season they played some brilliant football. Let's be truthful, scored a lot of goals and were rolling over teams. And he did fantastically well to qualify for the Champions League. The contract, to me, was one of two things. It destabilized the situation. And I think I've been banging on about it a long time ago, the effect it would probably have on people. That was a guess, you know. You can't be sure to be right. But also, we're all in danger of confirmation bias, but it backed up my idea that Antonio Conte, like some of, not all of, some of this generation of super managers you're all talking about there, it actually isn't about the football club that he works for. It's about him and his career. And I think that leads to disconnect very, very quickly, first with the fans and then eventually with the players. We know that managers are not going to last 50 years at a club. They're going to last two in the Premier League. It's now down to less than 2 years, isn't it? But let's say at successful clubs, it might be 2 or 3 years. All you can require of them in that time is they are 100% committed to the project. And I didn't get that impression with him. It went very badly with me, which is meaningless, but I'm sure it starts to affect everything else at the football club. And, you know, everybody is entitled to be the way they want to be within the laws of the land. I just found it his ego about his own methods. Whereas I think the best managers, by and large these days, and I'd include, obviously, Pep Guardiola, I'd include Jurgen Klopp in that, the best managers are the ones who put them, however much in the comfort of their own home, they think, God, I'm a bloody genius. Get me a mirror. I need to look at a genius. In public, at least, they talk about us. They talk about the team. It's a collegiate effort. It has to be.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the team's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham, all new, Thursdays on FX, stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Welcome back to The View from the Lane with me, Danny Kelly, Jack Pitbrook and Charlie Eccleshare. Just a slight intonation of excitement in my voice at the return of the Chaz. Perhaps more importantly, right at the moment, you should remember that you can vote for us at the Sports Podcast Awards. You have to go to the website and create an account. It's free and it's really easy. It's www.sportspodcastgroup.com. After that, head over to the Awards tab, then vote. Thusly, click on the Best Team Podcast. Click vote next to The View from the Lane. Don't mistakenly vote for somebody else. And then click submit your vote in the top right-hand corner of the page. Do that, actually, because we'd like to win an award and swank about the place. The endless waiting, as the theme music at the start and the end of this podcast illustrates, is difficult, but it does give us a chance to speculate a little bit more then about who next. First of all, very quickly, Jack, is how involved is Paratici in this? Because he is Conte's ally, and he's still under the cloud of the Juventus investigation. Is he picking the next manager?
I don't think he's picking the next manager. I think ultimately that will be Daniel Levy. I do think he's been drawing up the shortlist this month, and this goes back to before Southampton. I think for a few weeks now he's been trying to come up with a list of names to go to Levy. Although ultimately, you know, if you go back to October 2021, when they sacked Nuno, it was the deal to get Conte in was done completely by Levy. You know, it's not the way I've described it in the past is that Levy kind of leant over Paratici and grabbed the steering wheel. But even that's not quite true because he kind of did it in private. You know, I think Paratici
so he was running the car by remote. Paratici had the steering wheel in his hand. It's turning to the left. It's turning to the right. He had no idea why.
And then on the Saturday evening, you know, Levy said, well, Nuno's going and Conte's coming in after the Man United game. So
brilliant.
I think ultimately it will be Levy. And even though Paratici can draw up a shortlist, it would totally be consistent with what we know for Levy to say, oh, actually, Fabio, I've got manager X and he's sat in the car park outside.
Show him to his already there. Pierre-Emile's gone for the biscuits, you make the tea.
And we don't like, you know, and you're right, we're like Paratici's position is under some scrutiny, to put it mildly, at the moment, so we don't but that's how I see the situation at the moment.
Charlie, I'm sure you've been watching this with a tremendous laser-like precision over the past couple of weeks, but you're a new voice to us back on the podcast, an incredible thing to say. Who do you think they will be going for, and who do you think they should be going for? And I'll accept that you can't go in depth on here, but I just want to hear your names and some quick views.
I was saying this yesterday to Jack and James. I'm really conflicted as to who I think they should go for. I mean, I opted for Pochettino in this piece that a bunch of us did where we said who we thought should be the new manager. I don't think it's a no-brainer by any means. I think I can totally see the case for and against. I am a little bit ambivalent on that, but I also think it feels a bit like an itch they've got to scratch. And I think it could, you know, if you take away what he did in that first spell, he does tick a lot of the boxes, you know, of what they want. So I think he remains a very attractive option. I mean, one manager who I really like is Thomas Frank, who I know people say he doesn't play attractive enough football. There are a couple of things there. One, when they were in the Championship, he played much more attractive football. And I think the way they play now is pragmatism, a word that's often misused in football. People often describe Mourinho as pragmatic. I don't think he really is. I think he fundamentally believes in an ideology.
He's dogmatic,
He's dogmatic. It's not an ideology you believe with. I think Thomas Frank is pragmatic in the sense that he knows he doesn't have players. You know, I think if you looked at just the quality of the players, Brentford would not be where they are in the Premier League. They're punching above their weight because they found a very, very effective way to play. And, you know, I watch that team and I'm just like, they are so much greater than the sum of their parts. They look well coached, well organised. You know, things that haven't always been the case for Spurs since Pochettino left. So he really appeals to me. And I think he'd be more adaptable than people think, especially given how good they were in the Championship. Who they will go for, I mean, it does depend slightly on how much influence Paratici has. You know, if he does, then we know he's a big admirer of Luis Enrique. And our Spanish correspondent, Dermot Corrigan, made the case for Enrique in this piece I mentioned, which I can see. I know some fans are a little bit put off on the basis really of the World Cup and that pretty dreadful game against Morocco, which I accept was hugely soporific. So I think it does depend on his influence. Then someone, I mean, I can imagine a situation where, you know, that this need for a kind of someone you can get in straight away, Thomas Tuchel's available. It would very much follow the recent pattern of let's go for a win now, Chelsea hand me down, which I think would go down very badly with large sections of the fan base.
It's also a bit unfair on Tuchel, who he brings all of the kind of intensity baggage that Antonio Conte brings and brought, for better or worse, but it's actually a very, very good tactical coach. Just a very good coach when he gets in his stride.
Yeah. And to be fair to him, he's a lot less far on that journey. I mean, I think this idea of managers having a shelf life of a decade or thereabouts, Miguel Delaney wrote a really interesting piece on this a couple of years ago, looking at that and sort of breaking down the numbers of how long elite managers stay at the top. And it was something like very consistently about 12 years. And I do remember the only sort of caveat reservation I had about Conte when they appointed him was when we did a podcast on the day, and I said, I think it's a really good appointment. I just wonder if he is past his best, and if it's the most imaginative that Levy could have gone with. And I actually got a bit of pushback from fans, being like, you know, how can you say that about the great Antonio Conte? Hopefully, Thomas Tuchel is less far along that journey. He is still, his coaching methods are still modern and exciting, but he's also someone who's fallen out with, you know, his employers before, and I don't know how much.
To be fair to some of his former employers, they are notoriously easy to fall out with. So we put it no more strongly than that. He's at clubs.
And he was actually very impressively diplomatic last season during that very difficult period at Chelsea.
I thought he handled that brilliantly.
He did. Yeah, he did.
I thought he was in such a difficult position, and it would have been so easy for him to do what I think most managers would have done, which is to say, I'm just here to talk about football.
Yeah.
And in fact, he answered, put in a basically unprecedented position for a manager to be in. I thought he was more honest than I would have expected him to be in those circumstances. I thought he was really impressive.
Yeah, you contrast that with the Eddie Howe, I'm going to go away and educate myself bullshit. And yeah, he was impressive.
Jack, have you had any more thoughts in the last 72 hours about who?
What I think Tottenham should do is do what they did in 2014, which is go for, and I don't mean specifically appoint Mauricio Pochettino, I mean appoint a young manager who is, you know, the sort of first half of his career, who has very clear ideas about how he wants to play football, who has a real kind of hunger to prove himself at a higher level, and who can provide the club with that sense of a fresh start, because that's such a valuable thing in football. You know, clean slate for everyone, new set of ideas, get rid of the old players who don't buy into it, start bringing the new players who do. Like, that, I think, is what Tottenham need right now. And that's this might sound like an argument for Pochettino. It's not really an argument for Pochettino. No, it's actually more, I'd love to see, I think De Zerbi is brilliant, and I would love to see De Zerbi at the club. Ruben Amorim at Sporting has done fantastically well. I'd love to see him. So those are probably my two. You know, Thomas Frank would be great as well. But those are probably the two that I like the most. In terms of Pochettino, I just have slightly mixed feelings about Pochettino. Like Charlie says, he does tick all the boxes. I guess one of my reservations is everybody will want it to be 2014 to 2019, and it won't be, because it can't be. Like, Pochettino is different. Tottenham's very different. And I also feel like, you know, if you spend any time discussing Tottenham on the internet, as we do, or even in real life, every single argument comes back to an argument about, well, they were right to sack Pochettino, they were wrong to sack Pochettino, but they didn't back Pochettino, they didn't buy him the players he wanted, they didn't sell the players he wanted. And all, it's just this big, like, every argument comes back to 2019. It all comes back to the Champions League final and sacking him for Jose. And I just feel like if Pochettino came back, everybody would just be, we'd be relitigating all this stuff yet again in the midst of a new Pochettino era. And it would, I mean, I think, well, the one thing they need as a football club, and maybe even as a fan base, and maybe even as a group of players, is a new set of ideas and new personality, and some, like, a new kind of force that they can get behind, a new unifying force in the guise of a new manager with a new set of ideas. And while Pochettino, I think, would be amazing in so many ways, both on an emotional level and frankly on a football level, because his football is miles better than the football we've seen for the last 4 years, I have slight reservations for that reason.
Yeah, I see that, and that's why I am ambivalent about it. And I think it's a really interesting point about sort of looking back too much, because I do think with Mourinho, what happened was for Mourinho ever since about 2013, since that second spell at Chelsea, everything's been viewed through the prism of what came before. So it's actually really hard to look at things objectively, because, and Pochettino would be the same, everything that happens, there would be some sort of precedent from the first period. And so constantly you'd be saying, like, oh, so he didn't play, he rested the goalkeeper for a cup tie, just like in the FA Cup semi-final of 2018. Or on the flip side, you know, they come back in a game and it's like, oh, well, this could be his Aston Villa moment or his Ajax moment. And it is really, that can really sort of, I don't know, gnaw away at you and eat away at your ability to look at things objectively and in the moment. I also think it's really important if fans don't want the kind of win now, gun for hire sort of approach they've gone, if you do want someone who is more about a project longer term, you will have to accept some bad times. And I think you know, generally fans are pretty good. And James talked about this really well on Monday. In that first season, say at Poch's first season at Spurs, results weren't spectacular, but you could see the direction of travel. But there are going to be games, you know, and you saw, you know, Jurgen Klopp, he in his first season was celebrating a home draw against West Brom. And I'm sure there were some fans at that time saying, like, God, look how far we've fallen. We're celebrating a home draw against West Brom. There are going to be, if you want a long-term vision, there are going to be some down times. And it's up to everyone, fan base, the owners, whoever.
I mean, Charlie, you speak words of obvious truth. You only have to look at the state of Arsenal's fan base less than 2 years ago. And here's the team now apparently romping to the league title. You know, getting antsy about stuff when things aren't going well in a game or even a run of three games. I mean, I know we do it all the time here as well. Everyone does it. But the truth of the matter is all you're looking for is a feeling that some progress is being made. A couple of quick things before we move on yet again. Emmanuel Adebayo has retired at age 39. I was asked by our producer what my memories of his time at Spurs. I mean, a very good player, Emmanuel Adebayo. Probably had his best days at two other clubs. But, of course, he's forever now, whether he likes it or not, tainted by the saluting with Tim Sherwood. Comedy saluting with Tim Sherwood. I'll make the point that Destiny Adoghi is up for Player of the Month in Italy. I've tried to watch the Udinese games that I can. And he reminds me in some ways of the young Danny Rose. He is incredibly well-engined. He's getting forward fantastically. Often ends up, his destination is the center is the penalty spot. I'm not sure he's a great defender yet, but that is the easier part to teach players. Which takes us on, finally, to a slightly bigger picture. Now, we'll do whole podcasts about this, I'm sure, in the future. And Jack, you were on the podcast on Monday, where I kind of warned that whatever we said on the podcast would end up with people using Conte's speech to back up whatever point of view they have about Spurs, i.e. someone like me, that he was not the correct fit as a manager and was not doing a very good job because of his own needs. I don't want to use words like agenda. They're loaded. His own needs beyond the football club. And, of course, we have to take into account everything that happened to him personally. But other people would say this is a sign that Enoch haven't backed yet another manager. And so it all unfolded. And we got a lot of praise for the podcast we did. Here's a podcast talking about itself now, which I think is only just the right thing. We got a lot of praise for some of the things that were said in the podcast, trying to bring some sense to a chaotic situation like artists. And then after that, as the news of the podcast and its record number of downloads spread out, people who don't normally listen to it were coming back and saying we are tainted by not being Enoch out enough, not being anti-Levy enough. But it was interesting, Jack, to see that people like you, and to a lesser extent me, were being accused of being on the payroll of Daniel Levy. You're never going to convince people that because they are so one issue, but it was interesting to watch all that unfold over the last few days.
Yeah, I definitely think there are some people who are so anti-Enoch that they have basically decided to sympathise or even agree with what Antonio Conte said on the weekend. I know that some of us, I often get accused of being excessively pro-Enoch. I know that quite a lot of other journalists do. I think this is slightly unfair because I think that we have been very critical of Daniel Levy, I think repeatedly. I think just the other day when I wrote something about how the last few years have been like the sort of strategic disaster of Tottenham DNA.
Totally.
And then appointing Nuno and then
we
Conte.
Have said that clearly.
Yeah, and we have been very clear that basically almost all the football decisions in the last sort of 4 or 5 years have got wrong. Ever since, basically from not allowing Pochettino to clear out the players he didn't want, starting about 2017-18, so about 5 or 6 years ago, to finally signing players for Pochettino by the time that the Pochettino era was clearly finished, to sacking Jose before the League Cup final, to appointing Nuno to replace him after kind of bottling a rebuild, and then appointing Conte, which was good, I thought, but then not giving Conte the conditions to be successful, and all the while allowing his contract to run down. So I'd like to think there has been what I think to be a sufficient amount of Levy criticism on this podcast, as well as acknowledging the stuff that he's obviously done really, really well, which we've done too. So yeah, I guess I'm slightly surprised by that line of criticism.
Charlie, welcome back to the firing line.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote in literally the piece, my first piece back was talking about how no one comes out of this looking good, the whole Conte experiment, not least Daniel Levy, whose appointment, you know, the buck has to stop with him because it was, as Jack said earlier, it was very much his decision and it just hasn't worked out and just basically repeating the same mistakes that he'd made 2 years earlier. But there is a need for balance because there are other Premier League club, you know, if you think where, and people don't like hearing this, but you know, Daniel, it's not simple. It's not good or bad. Daniel Levy's made some bad decisions. He's done some very good things for the club. You've heard it a million times, the stadium, the training ground. And if you want to look at real mismanagement, look at an Everton or a club like that, who, let's not forget, you know, Spurs were 20 years ago, they were a mid-table team. They were sort of going nowhere. They were in that kind of Everton space or where Everton were a few years back before they went a lot further. So it's not an easy thing. They're now, they were going to be one of the European Super League teams. They're European regulars. They're in the Champions League a lot. But, you know, two things can be true at once. They did incredibly well to get to that sort of upper echelon of English football, a regular in the Champions League. But mistakes were made that has prevented them from kicking on beyond that. That, to me, is the crux of it. So, and I think we make those points.
And they're still overperforming. They're still punching above their weight. You know, this is a team... Yeah. Sixth, seventh biggest wage bill.
Exactly. And the look, several things. I can't become somebody, it's not there for me, partly because of the things you say. There's a more balanced picture. The idea that I have any real power in changing the ownership of Tottenham Hotspur, they're a privately, this is whether I like it or not, and I don't like it. I much prefer the German model, even if it restricts their teams in Europe and things like that. And I'm not sure that, short of boycotting the product, which none of us can do because this is the bind that all football fans are in, what can do about it. Secondly, as I pointed out a few days ago, it's not all about, they haven't won trophies. The Spurs management group won trophy. And a long time ago, admittedly, totally, and frustrating as that is, again, what Jack is referring to there is a recent piece of research someone's done. If you compare wage bills to achievement over the last 5 or 6 years in the Premier League, Spurs are the third most successful team. Brighton are second, and incredibly, Manchester City are first because their manager is a genius. And he's getting, even out of the players he's got, he's getting more and more and more. We're running out of time, and so... we haven't had a chance for me to expound my theory that if they get Pochettino, and they should might as well get Bielsa as well and have him as director of football, but so, to guarantee that throughout the club, everybody is playing nine up front rather than nine at the back. I'll expand on that in a future podcast. Don't look at me like I'm mad. I've sometimes get these things right. Remind me, both of you, what people can read that you've written in the last few hours for people on The Athletic.
Yeah, the main piece that I've done is this one, looking at the fact that no one comes out of the whole Conte experiment looking good. Be that Conte, Levy, us, the media, the club itself. And then Jack and I both contributed to this, who should the next Spurs manager be?
What about yourself, Jack?
I'm not doing any work. I'm just sat here refreshing the Spurs official Twitter page.
Okay, wouldn't it be
wait to see what happens.
Well, wouldn't it be amazing, and wouldn't it help everybody, you know, the people who don't think we're eating it out enough. Wouldn't it be amazing if this long silence is because he's not appointing a new manager, he's negotiating the sale of the club? Listening as always to The View from the Lane from The Athletic. If you're not already an Athletic subscriber, you really should sign up now to read all of the incredible Spurs coverage. That's the correct word, it is incredible, as well as everything else on the site. It's simple as well, and it's relatively cheap too. Just go to theathletic.com/SpursPod and sign up right now for $1.99 a month for the first 12 months. That's theathletic.com/SpursPod. Thank you all for listening. The ticking of the clock for Antonio Conte continues. Hopefully, we'll have more to report in a few days' time. Till then.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.